Okay, Erev Tov, everyone. So great to see everybody coming out for the Alel Yud. It's hard to imagine that we could speak about a topic that's more important than feeling Hashem's presence in your life. And tonight's presentation that Rav Aaron Eliakim, Rabbi Israeli, and myself are going to present together is on the topic of feeling Hashem's presence in our lives, particularly not in a shul, not in a base medrash, not while learning Torah, but how to develop God consciousness, how to develop a connection, even when I may not be doing something specifically religious, or so one might think. My Rebbe, one of my Rebbeim, Rav Mendel Blachman, Karen Biavne, when I got there the first year that I went, pointed out to us that so many of us really generally do the right thing most of the day. We do the right thing most of the day. We don't really have to change so much necessarily what it is that we do. If you're a boy who comes to Kollel, chances are you do so many great things during the day. The key change that we have to make, he told us, is who is in the middle of the circle of our lives. If we view our lives as a circle, and we do breakfast, lunch, and supper, we do Shabbos, Mincha, Meir, we play ball, we go to school, we do math and science, Gemara, Chumash, Halacha, but who is in the middle of that circle? For so many of us, and honestly for me, when I got to KBY, it was the same thing. Who is in the middle of that circle? Me. We are in the middle of our circles. We do the right things, but we forget about including Hashem and having the goal of life to realize that Hashem is with us at all times. It's Hashem we're davening to. It's Hashem who's sitting with us while we're eating. It's Hashem that we're making brachas to. It's Hashem that looks over us when we go to the bathroom and everything that we do. Our presentation tonight is to try to figure out how do we develop that? How do we develop that connection? My suggestion number one, and I'm going to try to make it very practical. My suggestion number one is so simple. Talk to Hashem. Talk to Him all day long. When I'm about to make a phone call to a parent that I know is going to be a difficult phone call, I make some of those throughout the day. I say a little prayer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I say, Hashem, please give me the words to say the right thing to this parent. Please put the right words in my mouth. When I walk into my classroom, I had a connection with an elderly Jew in Mea Shearim, a sofer, Rabbi Eisenbach. My grandfather bought my father's tefillin from him. My father bought me and my three brothers tefillin from him, and I brought all my four sons tefillin from him. He just passed away 3-4 years ago. He had a store in the back of the Mea Shearim Shuk. He was 103, I think, 1,000 grandchildren. I had a connection with him. We used to talk a lot when I would go into his store. He told me, you're a Rebbe in the yeshiva, I want to teach you something, a piece of advice that I have for you. When you put your hand on the doorknob of the classroom, when you're about to walk into your classroom every morning, and you put your hand on the doorknob, as soon as your hand goes on the doorknob, say a little prayer to Hashem. Hashem, please help my words be accepted by the guys in the class. Please give me the right words to say so that the kids will be inspired. When I walked in here tonight, I had in my head the same kind of a prayer. Please give me the right words to say. Please give me the words that kids will understand. My second piece of advice, a lot of times people in life have difficult decisions to make. Should I finish watching this YouTube video or should I get to Mincha on time? Should I go to this place or go to that place? Should I go to this class? Should I choose this class next year or should I choose that class? Should I go into the honors class or should I go for the summer? Some of you struggled a lot with those decisions. I think we need to train ourselves to ask ourselves, What does Hashem want from me in this situation? What does Hashem? We got to get the word Hashem in our vocabulary a lot more. Asking him, davening to him, what does Hashem want from me in this decision? Do we ask those kind of questions? In the Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, the famous, amazing yeshiva started by Rav Meir Shapiro, there was a sign above the doorway. The sign said, L'chuvanim Shimuli. Rav Meir Shapiro was trying to train the students. When you're sitting in this room, with an Aaron Kodesh, with Rabbanim, with rabbis, when you're davening, when you're learning, it's easier to remember Shimuli. When on the door of the litter base medrash of that yeshiva, he wanted his students on the way out, when they would turn back to the base medrash to see the words, L'chuvanim Shimuli. Are you going to keep the connection that you had with me when you were learning and davening? Are you going to keep it outside? Rabbi Israel is going to speak specifically about Hashem in sports on the ball field, Hashem in social media. I would like to talk first a bit generally and then about one specific topic, which I think all of us need chizuk in. But first, in general, part of connecting to Hashem outside of the Beis Medrash, as I mentioned in this week's Daf Yomi, there was a Talmid Chacham whose name was Geneva. And the rabbis, two rabbis, were talking to each other, and they said, we should stand up for him, he's a Talmid Chacham. And the other rabbi said, how could we stand up for him? He's a Baal Machlokes. He's someone who causes fights and arguments. He's a Baal Machlokes. He might be the greatest rabbi in the world, but apparently he wasn't able to take Hashem with him out of the Beis Medrash, the way he behaved, the way he conducted himself, his character. It's not just how you are when you're learning and you're davening, it's about your character. The Pasuk says, "Durachah adayachin noam v'chol v'sivoseh shalom." Part of having Hashem with you is, how do I behave? How do I conduct myself? The Mishnah teaches us Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. We live in a world that people don't know how to disagree. People yell and scream and call each other names, and anyone who disagrees with me is not entitled to an opinion, especially in the political landscape that we find ourselves in. Everyone's got to yell at each other. No one wants to listen to one another. We say every morning in Davening, Lo'olam Yehei Adam. Yerei Shamayim, Mesiris Vagoli, Modal Emes, etc. But many of Bali Musar understand, Lo'olam Yehei Adam, part of being a godly person, feeling Hashem with you outside of the Beis Medrash is, Lo'olam Yehei Adam, the first thing is be a mensch. Lo'olam Yehei Adam, the first thing is be a mensch. How do I speak? What am I midos? Do I have refined character? Am I respectful? Am I humble? Have I refined my character? That's a person who understands that Hashem is with him at all times. And as far as I'm concerned, and this is going to be my final point on this first aspect, which is the importance of midos and menschlichkeit, that you should realize that you are a person that carries Hashem's presence with you at all times. There's a Rambam, Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah. It's on my wall of my office, and as far as I'm concerned, this Rambam needs to be up in every person's bedroom, in every classroom. This Rambam, I think, is a mission statement of how a person is a mensch. Listen to the words of the Rambam. V'chein. This is Perek Hei, Halacha Yud Aleph, in Yesodei HaTorah. V'chein. And the Rambam begins by saying, the more religious a person is, the more the obligation on him to sanctify Hashem's name. It says the Rambam, V'chein is dikdei kechacham al atzmo, v'haya diburo v'nachas im abrios. A person is careful himself. He always speaks respectfully to every human being, Jew and non-Jew, friend or someone who's not your best friend. Diburo v'nachas im abrios, v'daito mo revisi mahem. And he's always connecting to people. Who makablam b'seva panim yafos. He always got a smile for someone. V'ne'alav b'hem ein olvim. If they make fun of him, he doesn't make fun back. V'chamin lahem rafilu b'kilo. He honors every human being, even those that don't honor him. V'nosim b'avun. We'll talk about this in a minute. He conducts all of his business dealings with complete honesty. V'lo yara v'yim zami arz v'shivasan. He hangs out with the right people. He's wearing the tzitzis. He's wearing the tefillin. Gentlemen, I'm telling you, I work in a high school, as most of you know. When someone's wearing tzitzis at all times, he behaves differently than when he's not wearing the tzitzis. He always goes above and beyond the letter of the law. Everybody praises this person. Let's think of this guy in our class that's like this, gentlemen. Let's think of this guy. Who's the Kesser Shem Tov in your class? Who's the kid who has the best egos, who's the most refined character? Let's think of that guy. Let's put him in our head for a second. That's the guy that everyone praises him almost so. HaRez says, someone who behaves like this in the Rambam, Kidei Shes Hashem, V'olam HaKosim Omer, V'yomer Li Avli Ati Yisrael Hashem B'chayis B'ar. This is someone who walks around with Hashem always. This is someone who is refined character, who walks around with Hashem always. And I'm just going to say one more thing, and then I'm going to turn it over to Rabbi Israeli. One last thing. And after Rabbi Israeli speaks, and people have questions, and they want to speak about how this looks for Maisa, please, we'll hopefully take some questions. I want to speak about one specific area where, for some reason, people forget that Hashem is watching. People forget that Hashem is with us at all times, and that is in the area of dishonesty. The area of dishonesty. We're talking about feeling Hashem's presence in our life. I, for the life of me, cannot understand this. I shouldn't say I can't understand this, because I'm not going to say that when I was in high school, every single little thing I did absolutely 1,000% honestly at all times. I'm not going to say that, because it's not true. But I grew up and I learned something. I always say, how could someone be honest, dishonest? Someone who is dishonest does not believe in Hashem. Cannot believe in Hashem. Can't believe that Hashem is watching every single second. Do you really think Hashem is going to let you get away with it? You might pull it over on the teacher. You might pull it over on your parents. You might pull it over on your friends. But you don't think Hashem above who sees? You think you're really going to get ahead with that? Gentlemen, the Gemara says about Hashem, Chosamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes. Moshe Emes, Misoroso Emes. Gemara teaches us about Abbas of the Seal Shasham, speaks about this at length. Ruba Begezel, most people are dishonest, the Gemara says. David HaMelech writes, Erchatz b'ni kayon kapaya, first gotta clean my hands, Vasovos Mispach Hashem. Gentlemen, you're gonna be in the business world, some of you. You can have the opportunity to be dishonest in business. Any penny that a person gets dishonestly should burn a hole in his pocket. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's watching. You think you're going to get ahead being dishonest on an exam, being dishonest in business? Judaism can't tolerate even a little bit of falsehood. Chosama shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bitvar sheker, tircha. The Torah doesn't just say don't lie, it says you got to run away from dishonesty. If it doesn't pass the smell test, and I really feel like during COVID, because there were a lot of rules that people didn't observe and people didn't believe in, perhaps legitimately so in some cases. So we got the idea that following rules and doing what we're supposed to do is up for discussion. And finally, just in this week's parsha, Mosakiru Panim Babishvad Kakato Kagado. The judge who's not going to behave properly, lo sagur mipeish, don't be afraid of people, ki amishpat lelokimu. If you cheat in court, if you're dishonest as a judge, your fight is with Hashem. He's going to make it right. He's going to get the money for the person who wants it. Says Rabbi Bechaya, so your sin is not against the person who you took money from. Your sin is against Hashem, ki amishpat lelokimu. Hashem is watching. You're going to be in business. Are you allowed to make? You're allowed to use the business copy machine for your own personal copies? Are you? You know that The halacha of the Gemara says the brachas of a person's working for somebody else. You're not even allowed to stop work to say the second paragraph of Shema. We only let you say the first paragraph. You can't say the second paragraph of Shema because you're stealing time from your boss's business. So, dishonesty is something that the Torah thinks very terribly about. Just to review, I basically said four things. I said we need to talk to Hashem all day. Talk to Him. Ask Him for help. Life can be difficult. Have a relationship with Him. Number two, when a person is in a decision, what does Hashem want from me in this decision? And this is where we can live with Him. We have to develop a connection. We should. The word Hashem should be on our lips. We want to really create a connection. Midos and Menschlichkeit, Lo'olam Yehi Adam, feeling that Hashem's presence is with me always. Do I say please and thank you? Am I respectful? Do I always talk in a respectful way, respect every human being? And finally, particularly in the area of honesty, we have to redouble and retriple our efforts. We're not going to get away with it. Is it worth the 0.0005 that your average is going to change to be dishonest? Like HaKadosh Baruch was watching, do you really think Hashem is going to make you more wealthy? Because it'll happen, it'll catch up to you. Maybe not in a day or a week or a month, but at some point, if we believe in Hashem, He's going to make the things right. If we can keep these things together, hopefully we will be, as the Pasuk says, Hashem says about us, Yisrael Hashem B'chayis B'mar. Please give your attention to Rabbi Israel.
Okay, I want to just begin with the word. The word that we're spending a lot of time this evening trying to understand, trying to describe. And if you looked at all the flyers that were sent around, so the center of our discussion over the course of the next few minutes and throughout the evening tonight revolves around the word emuna. The word emuna means something to do with belief, something to do with faith. The word emuna also comes from the same shoresh, from the same root as the word in uman. Somebody who's a craftsman, somebody who sits and somebody who has a sculpture, has a vision in their head of what it is that they want to accomplish, and they stand there and chisel away, chisel away, chisel away, until they have this unbelievable, beautiful looking type of sculpture that sits in front of them. And the idea, the common denominator between these two themes, is that the world of Emunah is not just the world that we show up and all of a sudden with the snap of a finger we can go ahead and be people that are, you know, we just jump in and all of a sudden we're invested in Emunah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu guides every single decision that we make. Halavai, that should be the world. But certainly as we live in our natural existences, so it takes time and it requires us to chisel, it requires us to work, it requires us to put in effort, it requires us to fall sometimes, to stumble sometimes in areas of Emunah, and then have the ability to ultimately pick ourselves up and to chisel out that incredible piece that hopefully we're able to find in front of us. I want to spend a few minutes speaking about the world of Emunah that guides our lives outside of the world of the Beis Medrash, outside of the four walls that we find ourselves in right now, specifically in the realm of the world of our social media accounts, perhaps, and the world of sports, which is something that's definitely close to my heart. I want to focus a little bit more on the positive elements of these two things, what it means for a person who does have Emunah, how that can guide and how that can really put us on a path of allowing the Ribono Shel Olam, of allowing God to enter into those aspects of our lives. The third pick in the 2003 NBA draft, so the Denver Nuggets took Carmelo Anthony, player that many of you guys are probably familiar with. He just retired a few months ago. Carmelo Anthony was drafted after LeBron James and Darko Milicic, one of the greatest drafts in NBA history. Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade and some of the great all-stars that many of you have heard of, many of you try to emulate. After Carmelo Anthony was taken, after he was drafted, he sat down with the commentator, with the ESPN commentator. And they begin to have a conversation about what it means to be drafted into the NBA, why it's so chashuv, why it's so means so much to Carmelo Anthony to have been selected to the Denver Nuggets and selected at such a high place in the draft. So sure enough, Carmelo Anthony was one of the best high school players, one of the best college players in the history of high school and college basketball. He transferred to a high school called Oak Hill Academy. Maybe some of you guys are familiar with Oak Hill before having the best freshman season ever in the history of the NCAA, winning the NCAA tournament in Syracuse. A really fantastic college player. So he sits down, he gets selected, he takes that Denver Nuggets hat, he puts it on his head. He sits down for his interview with ESPN that night. And they ask him, they look at him, they say, Carmelo, you were just taken, you're the number three basketball player probably in the world that's graduated to this point of making it into the NBA. There's got to be somebody that you can look to that you want to thank. Maybe a coach, parent, friend, somebody that you can turn to and say, you know, that's the reason. He was the motivation. He was the coach. He pushed me as a friend. Carmelo sits there, thinks for a couple of seconds, and he responds with the following. No. Got to only thank one person. Who do you have to thank? The interviewer asks. Some of you probably think Carmelo Anthony looked back and said, I have to thank God, but you'd be wrong. Carmelo Anthony looked back on national TV and responded to the interviewer, I have to thank myself. I have to thank myself. Who would I have become? What would I have made? Where would I go in my NBA career if I didn't put in all of the effort and all of the hard work and all of the days and nights and mornings and afternoons? I wouldn't have been anything. I wouldn't have been anyone. I would have been, you know, somebody who tried to make a career in professional basketball, and I would have gotten nowhere. And the interview stopped. They went to a commercial break. And that was it for Carmelo Anthony. I saw this interview, I was absolutely blown away. Because sometimes in life we put, like Rabbi Kamenetsky mentioned, the I so much in the center of our lives. It was me, it was I was the one who was successful at doing so and so. There are famous stories about people that sent letters to Lubavitcher Rebbe, sent letters to the Stipler, some of the other Gedolim. And the letters wrote about people's lives. I'm struggling with something in life. Parnassa, or my children, or whatever it is that I'm struggling with. And the Stipler and the Lubavitcher Rebbe are both quoted as responding to the letter sender with no letter. They took the letter that they received and they circled with red ink the letter I that appeared tens of times on the page, on the letter that they received. And when I think about Emuna, and when I think about how Emuna really shapes and guides our lives in sports, our lives in school, our lives with our friends and our social circles, so many times we are we rely on the I. We think that I am driving it, I am at the center of everything that happens. And Hashem just wants to be a little bit part of the things that we do. Hashem wants to be on our radar, and we need Hashem to be on our radar. And if I stand in life, and as I go through life, and I am at the center of my circle, so there's no way that my life is going to be driven by the lessons, the values, the morals that the Torah has, that Hashem Baruch Hu wants me to feel. Miss a layup, and miss a shot, I make a move to the basket and somebody's standing in my way. So I yell at the refs, I think I got fouled. I look to somebody else, I try to blame another person on the court. And what I'm actually doing in essence is I don't want to take the blame perhaps. I don't want to take the responsibility for missing, for failing, for not being able to succeed, for not being able to hit the shot. I'm not blaming you because I want to blame you. I'm blaming you because I'm at the center of this particular game, of this particular experience. And I think that when we talk about, when we think about Emuna, it's not something that we can just, like I said at the beginning, just jump in all of it. It's something that requires effort. It's something that requires work. It's something that requires us to have it on our minds as we make our way through life. I start a test. I have a big game. I daven Mincha or Maariv before a game in the middle of December, some sort of Yeshiva League rivalry. I say a tefillah. I think about what it means. Sometimes when you look at professional athletes, so they tweet or they post or they write, whatever. thoughts and prayers. Their lives are about thoughts and prayers. I wonder, and it's possible that some of them do, what those thoughts and prayers actually look like. And when we think of our thoughts and prayers, what are those thoughts and prayers? When we think of our tefillah and what tefillah consists of, what does our tefillah look like? There's one word in tefillah that I personally find extremely moving, extremely inspiring. And every time I say this word when I daven, I think about the experience that I'm going through. In almost every bracha that we make, the word atah appears. Aleph, Tav, Hey, where we literally say Baruch Atah, you, right? Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Elokei Avoseinu. Okay, so it's an unbelievable thing about thing to think about the fact that we're literally talking to Elokeinu Elokei Avoseinu, the same Hashem that spoke to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. But the word Atah is a word that's absolutely incredible. When I start to bow and then pick myself up and I think about the word Atah and I close my eyes, I'm literally having a conversation with you. I'm literally having a conversation with somebody who's standing next to me. Perhaps, and again, this is a very lofty level for a person to get to. Plenty of people have done this, but maybe you get to the foul line, maybe you sit at you're sitting on the bench before a game and you think about what you want the game to look like. And you say one line, one phrase, one sentence. Hashem, can you please help me be successful? Hashem, I really don't want to miss a foul shot tonight. Hashem, can I please? When you think about the fact that Hashem is the kol yachol, that Hashem can do anything. So we think about the fact that we can ask for anything also. Any little thing, something that's so minuscule, something that's so minute, something that you would probably never even ask your parents for because it's such a little nothing in the grand scheme of things. But Hashem wants us to be successful, and even more than that, Hashem wants us to have a relationship with Him, and that can guide so much of what happens outside of our svarim, outside of our tefillah, the opportunity to have God on our minds. A few months ago, I actually got a new phone. And after NC Swakola last summer, so some of you guys probably have noticed the rocky terrain over here. Imagine that a couple of you probably dropped your phone, maybe some screen shatters, some screen cracks. So last summer, my phone underwent some pretty severe trauma here in Beit Meir. And I needed to get a new phone after last summer. So I buy a new phone, and in September, I activate my new phone, and I sign in with my Google accounts. And I saw something that I will never forget. I saw something that literally is on my mind all of the time. And it reminds me of a comment that the Chafetz Chaim made that I want to share with all of you because I think it's so pivotal. It's so fundamental and so crucial to so much of what we do. I go into my new phone and I put in my email address. And I don't think about the fact that all of the Google accessories are now going to be installed to my phone. All of the different tchotchkes that Google has worked up on. So all of that exists in my phone. I get an email about 2 weeks later, the following subject line. Your Google timeline is now available for the month of September. Show of hands, how many of you guys have ever heard of Google timeline? One of you. Okay, so I'll share something with you that's absolutely fascinating. Chafetz Chaim has a lot of beautiful svarim that Chafetz Chaim has written. One of them is called Shem Olam. It's a sefer that Chafetz Chaim describes some of the beauties of Shabbos, of Kashrus, and at the end of that sefer, the Chafetz Chaim describes the fact that the greatest development in our world is the development of technology. When we think about the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, which describes that Shem is an ear that can hear everything, eyes that can see everything, so there was never something that we were able to put our fingers on. There was never something that we were able to understand, to appreciate, to internalize. And with the advent of technology, all of you have probably been in touch with people thousands and thousands of miles today. And you probably are on the daily in touch with people around the world. You're watching whatever it is that you're watching that was created God knows where. And when we think about the fact that Hashem can see, Hashem can hear everything, it's much more possible for us to conjure up such an image, for us to conjure up such a mental visualization. Google Timeline. Get this email, I open up the email and I press open up Google Timeline. And I see the following. You can all look it up. You can all find it on your phones. If any of you have a school email account that has associations with Google, with Gmail, so it's very likely that your phones actually go through the exact same thing. And every single minute of your lives is tracked. Every single minute of your days is tracked. Every minute that you leave your home, so there's a notification that comes up on Google that at 5:34 a.m., you walked out of your house. At 5:38 a.m., you arrived in shul. At 5:50 a.m., you drove wherever it is that you drove. And you can go back for years and years and years and see exactly where you were, exactly the times that you were there, and exactly how long you stayed there, and oftentimes what you did there, what you bought there. And I couldn't believe it. I had no idea that this was following me my entire life. Any of you can take out your phones right now and search Google Timeline. You will notice that from the day that you began putting Google emails or whatever it is on your phones, your Google Drives on your phones, you have literally been tracked by Google. Every store, if you walk into a store and you're standing at the cash register at 7-Eleven to buy a Slurpee, it captures that. Google captures that, and you can go back on your phones to whatever day it is. So today, I went back to 2013, the summer of 2013, and I found where I was today, this July 18th, 2013, and I can show you exactly the minutes, the seconds, how much time I stayed there, what I did there, and this exists on every single one of your phones. We think about the world of social media, we think about what it means to post, to be in groups, to put things on the internet, to share things. We live in a very scary world. We live in a world where our thoughts are recorded. We live in a world where basically every single thing that we put out there is there for everybody to see, is there for everybody to notice, is there for everybody to read, is there for everybody to know. It stays there, it remains with us, and it requires a whole lot of tshuva in order for us to get something out of the orbit of the world of social media. It's a very scary thing. It's a very scary undertaking. It's something that well beyond anything that many of us are capable of. But it certainly provides us with a tremendous amount of responsibility for what we put in writing, for what we post, for what goes on our Snapchat accounts, for every Snapchat picture that everybody thinks disappears that actually exists in a database that can be brought up in the snap of a finger by tons and tons of people. But the world of what the Chafetz Chaim described, that we have an idea, we have a little bit of an insight to what it means that Kadosh Baruch Hu is an Ozen Shomas and an Ayin Roeh, that Hashem has the ability to literally understand our lives and every single thing that we do. So I think that when we think about chiseling out, when I think about what it means to think about Hashem, it's not this world of jumps. It's a world of chisel, 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 and the more we're able to chisel, the more beautiful our sculpture of life is ultimately going to be. Thank you.
Anyone have any thoughts putting this into practice? Let's see, we get a little conversation going. Questions? How does it happen? Observe the 8-second rule. This is a great feel.
Yes.
Sometimes when you try to put into practice and you ask Hashem, like both Ruben were saying, like before you go into a meeting or a shiur, you can also go the other way. And when you miss a layout where you donors and that cheer, what's a practical way to also speak to Hashem in that way when it doesn't go through?
Okay, Morty wants to know, and we'll just, after I finish, we'll just, Rabbi Kamenetsky and I are happy to answer questions outside, but Morty just wants to know, what happens if something doesn't go your way? So we try again. we try again. You know, we do our best, and we put our best foot forward. We try to succeed in the best possible ways that we could. And you know, it's like I said, it's an effort. It's a lifetime adventure. And of course, it takes a tremendous amount of investment and time. And we dive in, and we hope that the next time we'll be more successful. I think, you know, it's hard to see results immediately right away, but we hope the next time we'll do better.
Shem does not expect perfection from anyone. Sheva Yipol Sadek Bekam. Whitner famously said that the Sadek is someone who dafka has fallen and then knows how to rise up. You fall down, you get back up, as the song says. But Hashem doesn't expect perfection. Only malachim, only angels are perfect. Pasuk says, Ki imchas licha l'man tibareh. The Rabban writes in his introduction to Sefer Devarim that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu rebukes Klal Yisrael at the beginning is because we have to know that the fact that we have negative things happen to us is actually a big chizik in our amunah. Because Hashem is there, He forgives, we do tshuva, we do better the next time. Ki imchas licha l'man tibareh, he says. Because Hashem forgives us, that's why we can fear Him. Because He doesn't expect perfection. A person might think, why should I get involved? I'm not going to be perfect. That's exactly who needs to be involved. Every person.
Okay, everybody should be going to their next session now.
Hopefully
we'll see you
tomorrow.
Thank you. Okay,
Google Maps timeline is only about Google Maps, not about your entire phone. And also, you have to.
Oh, I don't know.
It's also.
Search back.
It's.